Hey, good evening, Steele.
Good evening, Dave. Feeling great. How you doing?
Oh man, I'm terrific. I'm just excited to see you. You look sweaty.
Yeah. Was just playing soccer with a bunch of 20-year-olds. My shins are bloody.
Great. Hey, Steele. I brought a friend tonight. You want to meet him?
Oh, I'd love to. Who's your friend?
This is Zach. Exactly. He used to be my across the street neighbor.
Hey, Steele, how you doing?
Great, Zach. You sound really short. Is that true?
I'm taller than Dave, so
All
that's
right.
not saying much. That's not
Yeah,
saying
it's
very
not
much.
saying a whole lot.
It's about the height of a 15-year-old, I would say.
I'd say a tall 15-year-old that hasn't yet hit puberty, but.
Stretching it. All right. Well, Zach, I'm so happy that you're on the episode. Dave's been raving about you for a while.
Well, thank you.
Steele, this is my friend that we went to an IMAX playing of a robot fighting movie one afternoon together, and it was just me and him in the entire IMAX theater. We sat right next to each other and just enjoyed a good robot fight.
No, I thought there was one other guy that was like four rows behind us and
The ticket
I
taker?
think And I think it was just us. No one else was in there watching that. It was just us.
I felt like there was one other guy in there with us for some reason.
I bet you it was the theater. They just sent security in there to make sure you guys didn't start making out.
Probably.
It went okay. It went fine. And when the boy started dancing with the robot, we both were just overjoyed. It was terrific.
Hey, was this Johnny Five is Alive? What was the movie? What was
Real Steel with Hugh Jackman.
Real Steel?
Yeah,
Real
you haven't seen
Steel.
this?
No, they should have mailed me a DVD. That's my name. It should be in my
Right.
contract.
Yes, I would highly suggest watching it. Not really, but you could give it a go still.
I'm basically living Real Steel, Dave. I don't need to watch a movie called that.
It's just for the fighting robots that aren't Transformers. That's really all you need to see it for. It's
So
pretty
does Hugh
awesome.
Jackman voice a robot, or is he a human character in this film?
No, he is a human character, so you've got these robots that are all remote control. Think like the opening scene of Big Hero 6 from Disney.
You know that one still.
Oh yeah, I was for a
So
second I thought you guys were talking about Big Hero 5, which I don't have a
think
clear
like think
memory
like
of.
Rock 'em Sock 'em Robots, you know,
Okay.
that little having
So
your
these are like
kid.
3-inch tall robots that they're fighting.
So start with Rock 'em Sock 'em Robots, but
Okay.
actually make it like movie worthy.
Wait,
You
wait,
know,
wait,
so
wait. I think I might have saw a preview. Are these
Are
like,
these
are they humans in the robot
robot
bodies? Like
bodies?
mech
No, no,
warriors?
no, no, no. No, you're thinking of one of several different other movies that are equally as good, where they're probably fighting some kind of a kaiju. No,
Oh, kaiju,
these are like 10-foot-ish robots. So they're just remote controls, and they go around, and they fight each other.
yeah. Is it legal or is it like a black market kind of thing?
It's like boxing, where it's a little of both.
Oh, okay.
There's
Yeah,
sanctioned
there's
events and then there's underground events as well. But you got to do the
the
underground events in order to like build
get
up
your
your street
cred.
cred, right? And then also do like the fight sharking where you go in, you're like, "Oh, I'm just a little kid with a robot. Like, let me go ahead and fight you. I've got some money." And then he goes and hustles everybody.
Nice.
Nice. And then it all culminates with the greatest dance scene in modern cinema, like even better than Footloose, when the little boy and the robot are dancing together. It's terrific. Off the hook, off the chain, certainly.
Dang, guys.
That robot floats like a bump or a butterfly and stings just like that bee. That's
So
how
this
he moves.
is Real Steel. I mean, I can't wait to see it. So you said Pierce Brosnan was in it?
Hugh Jackman.
Oh, way off. Sorry.
Yeah.
Actually, Pierce Brosnan did a lot of the motion capture work for the robots for it, so you weren't too far off. Yeah,
Nice.
just talented with his body movements. So still, we got a lot of stuff to cover. We're going to talk about a few things tonight.
Can't wait. Tell me what's on the docket.
I brought Zach. We're going to ask him some expert testimony. Zach is a jazz pianist. Also, he's very experienced in school bus driving, which the two just go hand in hand. Also, Zach and I have a very distinct interest in Vin Diesel, so he's going to be able to add to our running segment, Vin Diesel, Running on Gas, and of course, Unchained Melodies, and we'll finish up with some book wisdom. Steele, this is the first time I've ever given a title to an entire episode. The title of this episode is A Mighty Wind.
That was a slow clap.
Thank you. I feel good. I feel really good about it. So let's just go straight at Zach. My first question is, Zach has talked to me about jazz a number of times. Ugh. And I've never listened to him at any time before, but I'm going to make the effort right now. Zach, why does jazz matter to anyone?
And just to warn you, you got 2 minutes max. Just kidding.
You know, Steele, it's basically like asking why does 17th century poetry matter to anybody? It's this incredible art form that I would say has a little bit more relevance.
Yeah, I would definitely agree. I'd much rather listen to jazz than 17th century poetry.
Right. So within the vernacular of music, I mean, you've got a whole bunch of different areas of the world that are bringing something different to it. You know, there's definitely a Chinese and Asian music that has its own distinct sound to it. There's European classical movement that has the Baroque movement, classical movement, and several other different movements within the European style of music, as well as you've got rock and roll, which arguably, you know, we started with blues, but, you know, England kind of took that over. So jazz is, in my argument, one of the greatest contributions America has to modern culture.
That makes me feel a little bit sad.
I mean, this is beyond
sad fantastic. Because you think it's sad that jazz is one of the greatest things America's made, Dave?
Yeah, I was hoping for more from our country.
Low blow.
We did Fighting Robots, too. Granted, an Australian helped with that, but no. So, and more than anything, I mean, I think it's if you go back through and you follow the history of jazz, it's a lot of it has to do. It parallels really well with in the history of African Americans within the United States.
Yeah.
Granted, I'm a white guy, as are it seems like most jazz musicians nowadays. But looking back into the history and the best ones, it's Martin Luther King at the Montreal Jazz Festival. He did this whole intro on how God has wrought many things out of oppression. He's endowed his creatures with the capacity to create. And from this capacity has flowed the sweet songs of sorrow and joy that have allowed man to cope with this environment and many different situations. And it basically just goes into like jazz is like the rest of life where, you know, there's a bunch of crap happens. And then through jazz, you can use that to go ahead and bring in your own situation, your own uniqueness. And when you play, you know, it's you playing. It's not like this pop song where, you know, it's this really polished thing that's the same delivery every single time. It's whatever you're bringing in there is this new and fresh and different take on the music every single time around. And, you know, and as you listen to different players, like Miles Davis is probably the best one just because of the longevity of his career. You know, it's you can see the difference in his life growing through. And I think that's something that jazz brings that more so than a lot of other types of music. I would say like singer-songwriterism music, you know, Bob Dylan, that sort of stuff, probably has a little bit more just because of the lyrical content of it. But from, you know, as far as rock and roll or rhythm and blues or classical or anything like that, you know, jazz, it shows that progression of people throughout lives. And I don't know, you can't really explain it.
So you've played in a number of jazz ensembles?
A number, yeah. I did a couple years in school doing it and been playing professionally for the better part of my life at this point.
So what's it like? Nice. You're a talented guest this week, Dave.
Oh, no,
you
no, no,
did
no,
yourself.
No, by professionally, I mean, I'm not – I'm still working a day job. This isn't like the only thing I have on my plate.
And one of his professional gigs I've seen, he was in a Neil Diamond cover band. It was fantastic, but it was a Neil Diamond cover band.
It was a Neil Diamond cover band.
What was it called? Brother Love?
No, that would have been great, though. No, we were Diamond in the Rough.
Whoa! I like it.
But what my the thing I was thinking about is what's the difference for you in playing in a jazz ensemble versus in one of these other places where you've played professionally?
Well, one is people pay attention to you when you're playing a Neil Diamond cover band. And it's, you know, it's a lot easier to market yourself when you're doing these just awful shows. You know, and Dave, that was even my worst gig that I ever had. The worst was I used to work at a place called Rockin' Our Ranch.
Oh, yeah, I've heard of it. Yeah.
It's exactly what it sounds like. And so I wore chaps and a 10-gallon hat and played the keyboard. My stage name was Brother Rod.
And that sounds mildly homoerotic.
We do the exact same set. The only thing that we'd ever change up is come Christmas time, we'd play some Christmas music with it too. But then we get in the exact same gunfight after every single show.
Yeah, it sounds really rewarding.
It was, you know, that feeling of I went to school for years and years and studied so I could play some country music for a bunch of Red Hat Society ladies. Yeah.
But at least there's an end game to your school. I don't know where you're going with all this, but I hope it works out with the poetry.
Yeah, I got out. I still play it, but I definitely have some more marketable degrees now.
So I got a couple of some rapid fire ones here. Kenny G, is he any good?
Oh man, when you posted this, as far as questions I needed to research, I wanted to give the guy his due. So I went through in the last couple of days I tried so hard listening to a bunch of his stuff, but it's just what I found with Kenny G is in his recordings, he uses the exact same tricks and gimmicks and like recording just bullcrap that a lot of, you know, pop singers or other so-called musicians who can't actually play use in their recording.
Kenny, like Kenny.
I know, and it's just awful. It's a waste. So, yeah.
So here's the mystery. Is Kenny G Italian? What's his ethnic background?
I have no idea.
Is he the world's greatest Italian jazz musician, at least?
No. You have the entire Rat Pack who beats him.
Okay.
If you're going to go ahead and say
Italian
that, you
Americans.
Know.
I'll say, Dave, he's no Yanni, that's for sure. Now, that guy was a multi-instrumental whirlwind. He could do it all.
That guy can wail. That guy's awesome, yeah.
Pride of Greece.
That's a whole nother episode.
But Yanni's, he doesn't label himself as something that he's not. He knows exactly what he is, and he owns that.
Yeah.
Kenny G is marketing something that he's not. And then people like this music just eat it up.
I mean, if we're going to make a recommendation, we're going to point people to John Tesh on this show. We're a little away from Kenny G and towards the John Tesh. That concert at the Red Rocks is life-altering.
Yeah, what's it? Is it the basketball theme song, Basketball Rock? I don't remember what it's called,
I mean,
but it's
that's
fantastic.
One of many, really, big hits. Yeah. Okay, more rapid-fire questions. Sorry, we got to get this going here. Zach,
okay.
We want to hear from you.
Okay, let's keep going.
So saxophone or trumpet?
With the trumpet, you win wars. With the saxophone, you win hearts.
Whoa! That's a bumper sticker.
I'm with trumpet. Steele, do you have an opinion, saxophone or trumpet?
I'd rather win a heart than a war, man. Sax.
That sounds about right. All right, jazz flute. Is this something we should pay attention to?
There's a handful of guys, but they're pretty far and few between, so... But if you want to see the best album cover of all time, Herbie Mann's Push, a shirtless, semi out of shape dude in the 70s, naked and oiled up with the flute. It's great.
Whoa. I'm looking at it right now. It's push, in fact.
Push. That's right. It's two pushes.
Double the push.
Double the pleasure.
Double the flute.
Pretty sure Howard has that record.
Are we sure that's not Howard on the cover?
When in doubt, flout it out.
Joel or John? And I'm talking Billy Joel or Elton John.
This is a piano question, not necessarily a jazz question.
No.
Ben Folds did an AMA on this Reddit a couple weeks ago. And it's like apples and oranges. I mean, they both are fantastic guys, fantastic musicians, and both played a big deal in me not quitting the piano when I was, you know, 13, 14, as I got into Ben Folds and those guys. So, I mean, you know, Dave, let me throw that back. I mean, Else, Juniper, or Mabel, which one?
Oh, he said before in the show, it's Elsa all the way.
That's actually not even her name still.
Yeah,
but Else.
It's just Elsie.
Else, one of those. I can never get that terminal vowel sound.
So it sounds like you pick a third when you pick Ben Folds. That's fine. This one you can take a little more time with. Your favorite jazz artist or somebody you think everybody should listen to?
Oh, man. That's, once again, I mean, that's like asking who's your favorite kid. So I went ahead. I made just a super short list of, like, here's the starting off points. So if you want to get into trumpet, you got Miles Davis, he's like the Kevin Bacon of jazz. Like, except for you can do like 3 degrees of Miles Davis. He just had such a long career, played with so many people. And Clark Terry, aka Mumbles. He's probably the best foundation of what modern jazz education and community outreach is. I mean, he's a great guy. He just passed away about a year or two ago.
He was really good in Dick Tracy too. I remember his role distinctly.
He was in Dick Tracy, yeah.
Mumbles.
So sax, Charlie Parker, Stan Getz, both awesome players. One alto sax, one tenor. If you want to get into Barry sax, Jerry Mulligan's. Drums, there's Art Blakey and the Jazz Messengers. And that one called Moanin'. That's probably like the top 3 jazz albums of all time. Art Blakey was just a monster. And if you want to go into just the gateway stuff, Frank Sinatra, Count Basie, Live at the Sands.
Okay.
Best of both of them.
So that's how you could get hooked. That's like handing me a joint, and then eventually I could get into like the Black Tar Heroin, which is some of these other guys you're talking about.
It's some Ornette Coleman. Ooh. He's like the Tom Waits of jazz.
Yeah, I know that voice. Hey, so Zach, I have a question for you. I didn't hear you mention Thelonious Monk, and I think that's one of the great jazz names. Thumbs up, thumbs down. Oh, what's the story with Thelonious?
I didn't even get to
the Monk.
To piano guys at all.
Yeah.
No, Monk, he's I mean, as a pianist, like, he brought in a whole bunch of different new innovations where he's just this tonal dissonance in this playing where he's getting all these, basically he's taking all the notes he possibly can and shoving them between his 10 fingers in a very tight and compact space. And it's just, he had some really, really great charts that he wrote. Ruby My Dear is probably one of his more famous ones.
Yeah, I know that song.
And his name's Thelonious Monk. Like, it's probably the coolest name in all of jazz.
I would agree there.
Really, just all of music.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So you studied piano for years. You've been playing it for a long time. What has that done for you? And where did you want to go with it? And,
you know, I wish I could make more money with it and I didn't have to work in supply chain.
But it's a natural fallback for most piano players.
Exactly. It was either continue with it and go full on academia like Steele with his poetry and just teach other people how to be hungry but love life. and I wish I could play more and I wish I got out more, but it's just, you know, as you get older, you get a family, you got bills and you have responsibilities. And so I still play pretty much every day by myself. And then I get together a couple times a month where we're doing, you know, get with some other guys and just go play.
Zach, can I ask you a question here?
Yeah.
We've got a friend, Jordan, who's like a guitar aficionado, and I'm guessing he owns like 30 guitars. And over the last 10 years, he's probably owned another 20. I can't imagine it's exactly like that with piano players because you don't have a place to put them. But how many pianos do you own?
Just pianos? Or are we going to go keyboarded instruments?
Well, yeah, keyboarded instruments.
Okay, keyboarded instruments. So do you want in my life or just currently?
But surprise me.
I mean, currently we've got... We've got a Hammond in the family room. There's the upright.
Hammond's an organ, and an upright is?
It's just an upright piano.
Rather than like a fold-up?
Rather than like a baby grand. Or,
oh, got it. Got it. Sorry.
Or a full grand or something where when you don't live in an 1,100-square-foot house. Yeah, and then there's a Rhodes piano, which it's this electric piano that was made by Fender. Think Ray Charles. He played on it all the time.
Yeah, okay.
And then the Wurlitzer.
My goodness.
The Whirly 200A, that's in Abby's room. Carnival
Barker. That's what I think of with Wurlitzer.
No. That's the Wurlitzer organ. I'm going Wurlitzer keyboard here, the 200A.
Oh, think, should have just said the 200A.
No, think like Three Dog Night. That was amazing.
Oh, I like to think Three Dog Night. I like it.
That's pretty much all Dave thinks about when other people are talking.
There's the accordion. There's the melodica. Melodica, that's what...
my goodness. We're at like John 10 already.
John Baptiste, so Stephen Colbert's new host, he plays the melodica. Mm. I'm proud to say that I was on it before the bandwagon effect started because of the new late night.
You were an early owner of a melodica.
Right, and then there's probably three synths and another two or three different workstation keyboards that I use for gigging. And I think right now I'm at about 14, 15 in my house. At its worst, though, I lived in this house. It was basically the Monkees mixed with... I know you guys have talked about the Anasazi Foundation, Trail Walkers, what Dave used to do. We had 18 guys living in a three-bedroom house, and most of them were just these dirty hippie trail walkers and musicians. And then I had this keyboard fort set up where it was, I think it was like 14 keyboards set up all around me. if you've ever seen the band The Last Waltz, and you've seen their keyboard player where it was just set up and it was just like this mad scientist area of keyboards, that was probably the happiest time in my life musically. Is that really
living in a three-bedroom house with 18 men and 15 keyboards?
We just partied all day long. Like, that's all we ever did.
That many keyboards, that's all you do. You just party. I know.
I mean, there was nobody had the TV. There was no like Xbox and video games like all the other dudes we knew. We would just come home and be like, hey, you want to jam? Sure. And we had three different people on each type of instruments that we had that could jump in at any time. And
wow, it was just when you great. Go three deep, that's a real band.
Hey, that's what George Clinton does.
Yeah.
Probably Funkadelic.
They just hit the down. I was listening to George Clinton with my son. We were dancing. It blew his mind.
Oh, you got to see them move like that.
It was great. Have you seen them live?
Oh, a couple times.
Oh, what a dream.
All right. So generally when he's touring, he's just got this huge band. I mean, like two drum sets, probably eight different guitar amps, handful of bass players, horn players. And it's just this ever-evolving cast. But the best night that I saw him was Barack Obama's inauguration ball 1.0 at the Black Congressional Caucus Ball in the basement ballroom of a Ramada Inn in D.C. And he was one deep in every single section. One drummer, one guitar player, and then one keyboard setup, and the keyboardist didn't show up. So I motioned to the guys in the band, like, hey, I play keys. They're like, jump up. And then I got to play.
No.
Yeah. So I did.
This is not real. Is this real?
I'm 100% for real. It was a whole room of just awesomely dressed black people in fantastic suits and awesome hats.
No! And you play keyboard with Parliament in Chocolate City?
On the eve of Barack Obama's inauguration at the Black Congressional Caucus Ball.
Wow.
See, I mean, like, I've been married. I have a kid. Like, I've done some great things with my life, but that was the peak right there. I mean, and everything since that day has just been a giant, just complete failure compared to that one day.
Man.
It was a great night.
You've lived more than the whole city I live in combined.
You're like a phoenix. You burned bright and you burned out, but at least you burned. That's beautiful.
Still waiting for that rebirth, though.
It's not coming, but
maybe one day.
I'm very pleased with what we just shared. Any further questions on that being a pianist?
No, not. The only other great story that I've got is, so when I was in high school, I thought I was good enough to go play Nordstrom's. You know, they used to have the live piano player. They don't do it anymore. They just pipe everything in now.
You thought you were good enough to play Nordstrom's, but hey, it takes a special kind of player to play Nordstrom's.
Well, apparently it just takes someone who isn't 18, because I showed up and the hiring manager just like did this look over at me. Like, she looked at me like head to toe, like obviously looking at just kind of like the way you'd look at like a spokesmodel or something. Mm. She's like, you're not what we're looking for. Didn't even play.
Well, at least she didn't have you arrested. I've heard some stories about Nordstrom security officers.
Well, our final question on that is, this is something Steele has been, it's been burning in him. Do you prefer the term pianist or penisist for what you do?
I just prefer piano player. That's probably the best way to go. Penisist is, that sounds like a wiener doctor. Sounds like a different kind of a field than what I've been in.
The more you know, the more you know.
Between the two, probably a pianist over penises.
Hey, man, if you can do it, own it. That's what I always say.
Yeah, I can't own that.
Well, I also saw something about school bus driving, and I was pretty thrilled about this. I don't know if you guys know, but we need a little bit of musical variety. You know, there's this musician touring right now, and his name is Bus Driver. Have you guys heard of this guy?
No.
Okay, check this out. This song's called Ego Death.
Yeah, no, I understand what you're saying, but is it sexier than torture?
Ship, yeah, Los Angeles, London, the cellulite, late in fight of the night. Yeah. Oh, shoot. Let me see if I can finish this. Okay, let's go. Yeah. We can make this better.
He might actually be appropriate for the term penis assist.
I think so. Yeah. Bus driver, man, he's tearing up the charts these days. I thought it was a nice little segue.
Zach, you drove bus You were a bus driver for what? Like 3 years, something like that?
5 years. I got my 5-year chip, and I got out.
You got a chip?
I did. For 5 years of. Excellence in bus driving within the Mesa District.
Oh, the Mesa District.
Mesa School District.
Yeah, that's a unified district.
Mesa Unified, number 14.
So what have you done? Is it actually like a physical, like a poker chip, or what kind of chip is this?
No, it was a metal coin that was basically just, it had a school bus on it on one side, and then the other side was the MPS logo. MPS being Mesa Public Schools, and so... You got that, and you got a little certificate that said, thanks for 5 years, and then I quit.
Did you cry when you got that? What were your emotions?
Reluctance to go up in front of such a large group and admit that I've been doing this for 5 years of my life.
Large group? Was it like in front of all of the bus drivers that gather you together, or was it like
this was in front of
school
all
assembly?
Right, this was in front of all the bus drivers for my bus yard. So there's 3 yards in the Mesa District.
Yeah.
The biggest district in the state. We had like 400, 500 bus drivers or so out of our yard. Or 400, 500 employees. So 300 bus drivers, about 200.
Support staff.
No, bus monitors. Oh, the people who couldn't hack it as a driver.
When the stress gets to you, you go to monitoring.
Yeah, no. So I drove special needs buses for the most part.
Short buses. Thank you.
You're welcome. Did you ever ride on my bus, Steele?
No, I did. I talked about this on a past episode, but I did ride a I rode a short bus for about a year in fourth grade.
That's right. When you were living at the Army base and getting shipped to the special school.
Indeed.
See? All right.
So Zach's a listener. He's a longtime listener, first time caller.
I'm a little intimidated here to find out someone listens to our podcast.
I know. I feel like it's the Diane Rehm show, where I just need to like thank you guys for 15 minutes about your excellence in broadcasting and. And then get to my question.
Oh, it's okay, sweetie. Go ahead.
Well, thanks, Diane.
Do you have an awesome bus driving incident that you could share to throw out there?
There's so many. Cutest thing I probably ever did, though. So driving the short bus, I'm picking up all the special needs preschoolers. So just little tiny adorable kids with some different kind of disability. And I pull up to this one kid's house. This little African-American kid. He's probably like 4 years old. And it's Halloween. He's dressed as Superman.
Oh.
He's got this little tiny afro.
And yes.
And he's blind. And has like this little tiny like 14-inch cane in a Superman outfit getting on the bus. It was just like the cutest and most heartbreaking thing you've ever seen in your life.
I love it.
It was great. And then on the opposite end of the spectrum, I did a lot of field trips and football games and stuff at night when my wife was working at a restaurant. And driving some cheerleaders to Yuma, and the coach thought it was a good idea for them to just change into their uniforms on the bus.
Oh, jeez.
And so when I yelled at all the girls to, like, hey, this is a glass bus, and, you know, high school girls in bras are not a good thing to be flaunting in public. There was a disciplinary review board because I was being
yes.
a perverted and gross and nasty driver and watching these high school girls get into their underwear.
Yeah, you love it when that happens.
Man, that coach, that was the worst. The worst.
You made it through, though. You got your 5-year chip.
That's true. I made it out of the fire.
So I think about Otto from The Simpsons as the only kind of reference point in popular media for bus drivers.
Tom Hanks was a bus driver in one movie, too.
Who?
Tom Hanks. And then you've got
Speed,
Chris Farley.
I guess Keanu Reeves could drive.
Yeah. Well, it's a city bus, a little different. Sandra and then Bullock. You've got Chris Farley in Billy Madison.
Yeah.
Bus driver. That was more the type of bus driver I was. I was the Chris Farley variety.
Nice.
Like, get in the bus, sit on down, shut up.
Okay. But what about your coworkers? So like, who else? Give me a sense for the range of people driving buses in the Macy Unified. Anybody with their 10-20-year chips? Old hands?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. There's Layla Miller. She was my boss. She had been there. She'd retired twice. She'd been there so long, she was fully invested into retirement, retired two times, was receiving double pensions, and was still going. I mean, she was probably 45 years into bus driving.
Some people just can't quit the game, huh?
Man, she loved – yeah. No, she finally retired this last school year, so this is –
Well, what kind of money is she making? Two pensions and a salary? She's like six-figure bus driver.
Probably not that. Probably nowhere near that.
And you count all the song royalties from that Clapton hit, too. She's rolling in it.
She's rolling. She's got everybody on her knees.
It's a bad bus driver scenario. Disciplinary review for that.
So as far as different people working there, I mean, you've got – everybody's in one of three camps. You've got either the college guys like me, where it's basically just Mormon guys who got back from their mission. They're old enough to drive a bus at 21, but young enough and uneducated enough, since none of us had started college yet, where this is probably the best thing we could get. So we were
and
the
it's
relief
a chance to meet high school cheerleaders. So it and, sets you on the
oh, yeah.
of marriage.
Exactly. Who could forget that?
That is, you were married in like your second or third year of bus driving. Isn't that correct?
About my third year, I think we got married.
Nice. Yeah, so you met her second year on the field trip, and then married her the next year. It's beautiful.
I tried getting a bus for the weekend so they could decorate it at the wedding and put
the candle
behind it.
That would be so great. They tie the cans on the back of a school bus.
Would have been awesome. Instead, we drove off in our 98 Civic together. Off into the sunset.
I feel like bus driving for me would be really stressful. They're big machines, a lot of noise happening, a lot of pressure riding on it. Did you have any stressful experiences, or did you ever come close to like a breaking point or emotionally wrecked?
No, not at all.
You're a rock. You're a rock, Zach.
No, it's bus driving. I mean, seriously, it's if you can handle a 15-passenger van,
nope.
You've made it.
Yeah, I can't.
I mean, yeah, so if you can't do that, You probably shouldn't get behind the wheel of a 40-footer, but you still might be able to do a short bus at some point in your life still. So don't give up.
Just know that an Astro van is stretching it a little bit. I start sweating and I'm like, whoa, a lot of weight behind the wheel.
No, but I will say it's a great job. There's a ton of retirees that were working there, tons and tons of retirees that, you know, they're just bored looking for something to do. They still get summers off where they can get out of Arizona. And
you're connected to young people. That seems like a cool job.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's definitely, I think if you're a college age student trying to get through school, or you're old and retired and just looking for something to do and you like kids, it's great. If you're anything in between, like 20% of the workforce there, you need to get out. I mean, you really need to like, just try hard. You know, if you could be a cashier at Costco or something like that. That would be a much better career path. And I worked there for 5 years. I started at 1250. After 5 years, I left at 1257 per hour. So there's really not a whole lot of room for growth.
They're not bumping you up. Those are words of wisdom from a pianist bus driver that I think we all should take to heart.
No, but there was some really great things with bus driving too, where you can work there, you know, during the school year, and then summers I go drive in Alaska. I drove up for the Olympics.
You drove up for the Olympics?
That's right.
The full Olympics?
The Vancouver Olympics. Okay. We were there for 5 months.
Whoa. You drove from Arizona to Vancouver, took Olympians?
No, I drove from Salt Lake to Vancouver, and then we were in Vancouver for 5 months. We'd had the whole Olympics. We had Paralympics afterwards.
The Olympics is – it's like a year-long celebration still. I don't think you understand.
No, felt that way. No, it was the best job I've ever had. They hired way too many bus drivers, and we were all getting salary, and they were all – so all my coworkers were complaining, like, we're not getting the hours. And
you're
so like, my
you guys realize you're at the Olympics and you're not driving. There's plenty of stuff to do,
and you're getting paid regardless whether or not you drive. So yeah, so they all took my hours, and I just was at the Olympics getting paid to just be there on vacation.
That sounds great.
Oh, it was the best job ever.
Man, that is a dream job. So much of your bus driving stories, like at the Mesa Bus Barn, you would play board games. Because you'd just be sitting there waiting for like a bus route to open up, and if one didn't, you would play games. And then Vancouver, you're just not driving buses. That is my dream job, to not drive a bus and get paid for it.
Get paid not to drive a bus?
Yes.
There's a lot of sitting around in bus driving.
So even when you're driving, most of the time you're sitting, I imagine.
Most of the time.
Yeah. But that does lead us directly into our next segment, running on gas.
Yeah.
Diesel. If there's anything a bus is, it is diesel. So so Vin is a must follow on Instagram. I'd say once every couple weeks, Zach, you just send me a text message with just one of Vin's pictures that is just amazing.
They're just so inspirational. I mean, because Instagram, you've got all these girls just making duck faces and all these like bro dudes just lifting, like, you know, no gains and at the gym. And then you just got Vin, just he's on the cover of Men's Fitness, but instead of being like, yeah, I'm a sexy beast, so say something like, remember one thing, one man can change the world. All love.
You know what I love about this? Your description is beautiful, Zach, but Dave is like, Vin Diesel is a must follow on Instagram, by which he means you text him Vin Diesel updates. I don't think he knows how to follow someone on Instagram.
No, Dave's not on Instagram. I keep talking to
Dave's
jump
like,
on.
I've got a friend who texts me every once in a while some updates. He's a must follow. that's something my grandpa would say, Dave.
I'm 35 still. It's the best I can do.
Oh, and then constant Paul Walker shout outs with showing his, you know, showing the tattoos that he got to remember Paul. And he's just a great guy.
It is. It's all inspirational. He's just lifting people up. He's not about just building himself up because he doesn't have to. He's already built up as high as you can build anyone up in the history of humanity. So he just wants to lift other people up there with him.
I'm pretty sure that within our lifetime, we'll see him. I think he'll be canonized by the Pope.
But the last picture you sent me, it was Vin Diesel holding a sword that's on fire, and it just says 1 month.
Oh, the last witch hunter.
You excited swords? For this one, Steel?
Is this the movie with Vin Diesel with an amazing beard that you sent me a photo still from that we talked about with Julia?
Yes, it's less than a month away. Wow. It's coming soon, and there's going to be a sword that's on fire at some point during this film, and I think he'll use it to kill a witch.
So is this a movie that's set in the world in which we live, or is it like a slightly alternate world that has real witches?
It's in our world. Vin Diesel's immortal. There are witches in our world. That's something that I think we all need to come to terms with. And Vin Diesel is the last witch hunter. It's unclear to me right now if this is a documentary or not.
Okay. And are witches like, is this like a Highlander scenario where witches are immortal also and only immortals can kill them? What's the, what do we know about the witch mortality rate?
Any idea, Zach?
I want to say in the trailer there was one guy who was saying like, oh, we meet again, which leads me to believe that they are immortal, but...
We meet again.
You know, when, but when you got Vin Diesel as the witch hunter, mortality rates are high on that immortal being.
Yeah, I imagine.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can't claim immortality if you're a witch because you know somewhere behind you is Vin Diesel and he's about to stab you with a sword that's on fire, which I think is the only way to kill a witch.
I feel like the twist in this movie, though, is we're going to find out that he's really like Glinda the Good Witch of Witch Hunters. So he's out killing... think Blade. Wesley Snipes is actually a vampire the whole time.
You see, you're making references that I should get, but you're going to have to explain it like I'm on a short bus because I don't understand anything related to movies. Think Blade. Okay. Help me more. Sorry.
So Blade is a fantastic...
Wesley Snipes. I know that much.
Right. So trilogy. And it's just Wesley. He's a vampire hunter. That's really all you need to know. Think of like...
Is that who Glinda Goodwitch is? Is that Wesley Snipes' character?
No. Glinda's from Oz. So you've got Glinda the Good Witch, and you've got the Wicked Witch in the East and the West.
I'm sorry.
Glinda's the good one who helps along Dorothy. So Vin Diesel is the Glinda of Witch Hunters. You know, he's... That's what I think. I mean, it's not for sure. He might just be some crazy immortal... You know, you got Highlander...
So the idea would be, this is going to be a franchise. So would the next one be like the second to last Witch Hunter, or what's the sequel for this?
No, he's still the only Witch Hunter out there still.
He just has more witches to hunt.
Yeah. You may think you've extinguished and exterminated all the witches, but there's always at least one more. Like you can't really, it's like rats in your house. If they're in your basement, they're going to be in your basement.
Well, and if there's witches, I'm sure there's the entire Van Helsing just cast of monsters that he can go hunt. I'm sure we'll see a vampire sequel. We'll see a werewolf sequel.
A Frankenstein sequel. I'd love to see him chase down Frankenstein. And he could be playing Frankenstein as well at the exact same time.
Do you mean Frankenstein's monster? Because that's let me help. This is my literary reference. Frankenstein was the doctor.
And that I was trying to read that book again the other week.
Bad life.
And I gave up. There was like a prologue followed by another prologue. And there's like four prologues. And then finally, like he was starting to get into building a monster. And I was like, I give up. This is too many prologues.
Any book with a main character named Victor, drop it.
Seriously. That guy's got nothing to offer.
Victor's supporting cast only.
Yeah, that should be a good life rule. So tell me, what else has Vin up to these days? I mean, he's got Witch Hunter coming out, and he's got Instagram. He's blowing up.
He's got Witch Hunter Instagram. So Fast and Furious is slated for release for next summer. He's yet to start filming, though, because they're looking for a director. Wow. Because Vin is just such a perfectionist. It just tries bringing excellence to everything he touches. So it's hard to find a director who's able to keep up.
I bet. You know, I have to say, I contributed to this, Dave. Did you know?
Oh, yeah.
I put a breaking news item. Vin says there's going to be a final Fast and Furious trilogy. They're going to end it out with three more movies.
Yeah, because 4, 5, and 6, that's a trilogy. So 7, we've already got the first one. So that means that Vin is promising me at least 2 more movies.
Oh,
I'll see if we can
okay,
get more
I see.
Out of him than that.
I misunderstood. I thought he was saying there's 3 more. I should have read the article.
It's at least 2 more. We've got Fast and Furious 8, long rumored between me and Zach to be titled Fast and Furious V8, because that's a great title.
Or the other one, F8, Fate.
Oh, I thought it was going to be like a computer key reference, like switch to the projector, F8. And V8, is that like the carrot juice? Oh, no, it's a kind of engine. Sorry.
Yeah, engine.
I was like, why would they make a carrot juice reference?
Ah, Steel, you got to start living life quarter mile at a time.
You've still never watched one of these, have you?
No, of course not.
Still, next time I'm with you in actual physical location, we're just going to sit down, watch Fast 5, and you're just going to be...
We got to start with one. Let's watch them all. That would be so fun, Dave.
you can skip three.
Is that the Tokyo Drift?
That is Tokyo Drift, yeah.
Guys, I basically know the franchise in and out.
The amount of time we've spent talking about the franchise, you definitely could have watched every movie in the franchise if you'd just taken this time and watched it instead of talked to me about it. Other good news, long dormant franchise, I think he's bringing back Triple X. Have you heard this, Zach?
I have. It's still the rumor mill. There's nothing officially announced yet. I think we'll see some more Triple X. I think Riddick's going to pop up once every 5 years or so.
Thank goodness.
But he's working on, you know, that huge role that he's got with Marvel right now, working on the next Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh, yeah. He's the tree.
He's the tree.
He's not a tree.
Oh.
He is Groot.
He's a...
The tree's a prop in the Groot. End of for it, more than that.
Groot. He says, I am Groot.
No, and I remember reading this thing about Bradley Cooper where he was talking about his co-stars, and he was like, Vin Diesel was just shy of being like full character acting Daniel Day-Lewis into being I am Groot. Like, he was so into his role as a motion captured tree who had two lines the whole movie. He said, I am Groot about 500 different ways, and then we are Groot right at the end.
Yeah, that's a role you really need to character act, because if you're not inhabiting it 24/7, how can you play it on the film?
But, you know, that intensity that he brings to every single thing he does, that's what makes him great.
So have you guys heard, have they set a release date for The Pacifier 2?
No, Vin is writing the script right now. Yeah. It's said to be excellent. He knows action and he knows comedy. He knows both of them.
Well, I'm pretty sure they're blending that along with Tooth Fairy 2 with The Rock Johnson. So,
holy crap.
The Tooth Pacifier.
Like, really, if you could put out a movie every 6 months with both of those guys in it, I guarantee you I will pay for that for the rest of my life. I will make that
just a subscription
right
service.
Now.
A subscription yeah. service.
I will pay like $30 a year. I'm in.
So here's the other question. Who's going to have the longer film career, Vin or The Rock, Dave? We've never asked this question.
Oh, geez. The thing is,
who's gonna last
people
longest?
Like The Rock. The Rock seems to be relatable, while Vin Diesel is just a really strange, like, alien man. No one understands what he's thinking or what he's doing. I think The Rock's going to keep going. Like, I love Vin Diesel. Like, he's... You know, my strange uncle. Like, I would love to just embrace that man.
But you can't see him being cast as like an elderly man the way that The Rock might be able to be.
No, The Rock. And The Rock's got that eyebrow raise. That's hilarious. Like,
that'll
he can,
be a good
he
grandpa.
Can ride that for another 20 years.
That's
yeah.
That's a grandpa look.
Honestly, I feel like The Rock's going to be like the Schwarzenegger of our generation, where he's just going to be there. But Vin Diesel's going to go full Mickey Rourke. Starts off on a high note. Fades away for a couple years and then comes back with a vengeance in old age.
He makes The Wrestler. He has as The Wrestler. That'd be cool.
No, it's going to be Triple X 17. Or he's going to re-kick that Fast and Furious franchise when he's in his 60s. One of the two.
I'm in for it. I hope the only plastic surgery he gets, though, is that he gets rid of that second chin he's developed. I don't want him doing anything to his face. I love the face. But you can go ahead and get rid of that chin. That's fine.
Hey, as long as everyone comes back here in 40 years, as long as Ludacris is still in the game, that'd be great.
So I think we're running out of gas on this one, but we're ready for Unchained Melodies. A Mighty Wind. Steel, this is we're going to have songs that feature wind instruments here. So my first selection, Steel, is a band called Beirut. Have you heard these guys before?
Love them. Zach Condon.
Yeah, so that answers your question. He is a trumpeter, and my favorite song by Beirut is Elephant Gun. The only issue is I don't think the trumpet comes in until like a minute and a half into the song, so I don't know. See what you want to do with this deal.
If was young, I'd flee this town. I buried my dreams underground, as did I. We drink to die, we drink to
Great choice. Beautiful song.
His voice is kind of goofy, but it's great. And I love the trumpet sound he's got.
You know, I think it was Laurel, my wife, when we first started hanging out together, dating, I first heard Beirut through her. She was playing a CD of theirs in the car and it blew me away. I still remember the first time hearing it. So yeah, it has a sentimental attachment for me as well. I like that.
Beautiful. So, Zach, you are the windiest of us. What do you got for us?
This is one of my favorite bands, Bela Fleck and the Flecktones.
I've seen them live, Zach.
They haven't, like, disbanded or broken up, but they're pretty much kind of, they haven't been on tour for years.
Yeah, this was back in the day. Jordan Fox took me in Salt Lake City.
All right, so what we've got here, it's a song called Big Country, which is just, it's just a beautiful melody line throughout. So Bela Fleck, as you guys know, is a banjo player. But within the band, there's a saxophone player, there's a bassoon player, there's an English horn guy, wind-wise, and then we've got steel pan playing, which is an instrument that I absolutely hate, but it just works so great in this. I mean, we'll just have to play it. And the best part is it's all these jazz guys who've come together, and it's, you know, they're making something that still is, you know, what I would consider jazz, to go full circle with this episode. But bring in something else to the table other than just that standard back pocket beat everyone thinks of.
And this is probably the best song ever inspired by Bryant Reeves, Big Country, the basketball player. Remember him?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Big guy. The Grizzlies, played for the Grizzlies.
Yeah, had a red flat top. He was the original Greg Ostertag.
Yes.
I can just envision Bryant, Big Reeves, Big Country just crashing the boards with that song going. That's all that was going through my mind.
I love that. Great timbre, very warm, melodious. I feel like, maybe this is crazy, but I feel like the Dave Matthews Band wishes that they could sound like Bella Fleck. Like, that's what they aspire to. They're like the poor man or the homeless man's Bella Fleck and the Flecktones.
You know, Dave Matthews and Baylor, I consider them pretty well on par with one another. It's a totally different approach and different sound, but I think it's within that same general genre. And they've done a bunch of touring together as well.
Oh, really? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's cute.
There's such warmth in that. Really, just that was a drive-in, almost Irish sound to me. I don't know what I'm hearing.
And if the listeners want to jump on this on YouTube, you fast forward, there's this awesome duet between the sax player and the bass player, where it's this great dialogue between the two of them that just goes back and forth. And every time I listen to it like that, I just get goosebumps.
Awesome. Well, we'll put the YouTube clip up on the episode recap when we get there. And I mean, we're just listening to some high art there, and I want to keep it classy. I'm going to go with probably the connoisseurs, geniuses, musical, I don't know, savants, really. This is Beastie Boys.
Talent.
This is, yeah, talent. Sure Shot. Very famous flute loop at the beginning here. And that's what I thought of when I thought of Wind.
You can't fall, you don't stop.
And the song cuts out perfectly.
It did stop. Wow.
Yeah,
well,
we got enough of that. So who's got the next one? And you don't stop. Oh, when you can't. And you don't stop. I got the brand new juice, you're guaranteed like you. I'm on like a child, can't fit the suits. I'm a doobie red, I'm not a D14. And everything I do is fucking like Lee Dorsey. Well, it's a thing and I'm the bell on 1, 2, 3. If you want to do the round, then come see me. I got the sound won't fit, will you keep me from it? I keep it on and on, it's never been a time there. Strictly handheld is the style of gold. Savoir Faire, never rocks the mic with the pantyhose. Even a Lee Dorsey reference in there. We've got it all.
I heard Mike D learned the flute just for that song, so it's beautiful.
Yeah.
I mean, my next one is one of my favorite songs. Like when I tried to compile a list of songs I thought were perfect, and this is on it. This is probably my favorite Radiohead song. And it's just an odd one, full of brass instruments. It's beautiful. Life in a Glass House.
That's like the least mentally healthy song I can imagine. That's like suicidal almost. I really liked it.
It reminded me a lot of Rufus Wainwright.
The plaintive and sad. And
it just wait when the chorus comes in, just it really punches. It's awesome. From what I understand, the musicians, they just had them come into the studio and Tom didn't have like any notes or anything for them to play. Just that they just all kind of improvised in the background and it came out just really, really great.
Cool. Zach, what do you got for us next?
All right. So the next one, it's this band that I've been listening to a ton lately. They're called Wolfpack. Oh,
love them so much.
Do you know who they are?
Yeah.
Yeah. We've had them on the show before, man.
Right. Yeah. So Wolfpack, this is off their upcoming album. It's due out next week.
Ooh, I haven't heard it.
I'm driving all the way to LA just for the CD release show. It's going to be great. So the song is called Back Pocket. You can start this song somewhere. Let's fade it in somewhere in the middle, because the winds don't really come in until the very end of it. When you kiss me on the playground, I lost my breath, I had to lay down. And this is what I had seen. And I had to write the words out, because you took them out of my mouth. But it's hard for me to read. Gosh. I know that it's taking me all this time to say, ooh, I'm slow. So it's taking me all this time to say, ooh, tiptoe. And I want to acknowledge my mistake, ooh, uh-oh. And I hope that you know it's not too late, ooh. I know that it's taking me all this time to say,
that's got to be the funnest song we've put on in this show in a long time.
Man, that's like elevator music in an elevator where you just want to take all your clothes off. I am such a sucker for falsettos. Loved that. That's great. I'm excited for that record now.
Oh. All right. You're going to take us out, Steel? Dave, what do you got?
I'm really stunned that you didn't play this song. I'd
rather be a star. Oh, no.
Yes, I would. If I could, I surely would.
Lost opportunity there, but the song I really wanted to play actually is totally different. This is an Aboriginal artist named Jupuru, T-J-U-P-U-R-R-U, from Australia, and the song is called Uncle James Brown. He plays the didgeridoo.
Oh, yeah. Perfect way to wrap it up. Volpec to that guy. I think we're all ready to go to sleep now. It's beautiful.
Yeah, that's all I got.
Well, Steel, we always finish this with some words of wisdom from a book.
Yep.
Or a poem. Today, I'm going to read something. You ready?
Yeah, I can't wait.
This is from Flannery O'Connor's one novel, Wise Blood. This is towards the end of the book. He had not gone 5 miles on the highway before he had heard a siren behind him. He looked around and saw a black patrol car coming up. It drove alongside him, and the patrolman in it motioned for him to pull over to the edge of the road. The patrolman had a red, pleasant face and eyes the color of clear, fresh ice. "I wasn't speeding," Hayes said. "No," the patrolman agreed, "you wasn't. I was on the right side of the road." "Yes, you was. That's right," the cop said. "What do you want with me?" "I just don't like your face," the patrolman said. "Where's your license?" "I don't like your face either," Hayes said, "and I don't have a license." "Well," the patrolman said in a kindly voice, "I don't reckon you need one." Well, I ain't got one if I do, Hayes said. Listen, the patrolman said, taking another tone. Would you mind driving your car up to the top of the next hill? I want you to see the view from up there. Purtiest view you ever did see. Hayes shrugged, but he started the car up. He didn't mind fighting the patrolman if that's what he wanted. He drove to the top of the hill, with the patrol car following close behind him. Now you turn it facing the embankment, the patrolman said. You'll be able to see better that away. Hayes turned it facing the embankment. Now you better get out, the cop said. I think you could see better if you was out. Hayes got out and glanced at the view. The embankment dropped down for about 30 feet. Sheer washed out red clay into a partly burnt pasture where there was one scrub cow lying near a puddle. Over in the middle distance, there was a one-room shack with a buzzard standing hunch-shouldered on the roof. The patrolman got behind the Essex and pushed it over the embankment, and the cow stumbled up and galloped across the field into the woods. The buzzard flapped off to a tree at the edge of the clearing. The car landed on its top, and with the three wheels that stayed on, spinning. The motor bounced out and rolled some distance away, and various odd pieces scattered this way and that. Them that don't have a car don't need a license, the patrolman said, dusting his hands on his pants.
That's Flannery O'Connor. That's great. There's some book wisdom for everybody.
Yeah, so take that home. Take that home with you, Zach.
All right, Dave.
Thanks for participating, Steele. Thanks for participating, Zach.
Anytime, Dave. Still need to get you over to a live show sometime.
I don't know that it'll ever happen, but that sounds beautiful.
Well, I doubt anyone's going to come up to where you live these days.
That's true.
Off the chain. It's off the chain.
I want to know all about you, Zach.
He's a pianist. Are you excited?
I'm really excited. Let's cuddle up. Talk about tickling the ivory.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, you've just been sitting on that. Steel, wind instrument, you're blown into brass. You got to answer these questions yourself, man.
Thank you. I was really practicing that one before.
Good night, everybody.
Night.
Good night, John Boy.